This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 177 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Before we get into this week's transactions, I wanted to let you guys know that FanDuel is teaming up with Dash Digital Cash, the fastest digital payment system on the planet, to bring the community a new type of prize and exciting new contests every month. Dash, the evolution of money. Check out the Crypto Cup on FanDuel.com for more info. Buy Alvin Kamara. After New Orleans' Week 5 matchup against Washington, Alvin Kamara managers were in a panic. And I know that because people were telling me about trades that they were completing. That they traded Calvin Ridley, Kenyon Drake, and Kiki Cutie for Alvin Kamara prior to Week 6. Another fantasy manager gave up Philip Lindsay and Jordan Howard for him. And then one person just gave up James Conner for Alvin Kamara straight up. People were telling me about these trades via Twitter. Now I know, these things don't happen in your league. But they're happening in leagues, so I'm going to talk about Alvin Kamara. Anytime a player sees a dip in usage, you first have to ask why. Why did Alvin Kamara only carry the ball 6 times in Week 5? Why did he see just 4 targets? Fortunately, there are a lot of logical reasons as to why this happened. Kamara was actually on the injury report leading up to that game against Washington. He had a knee injury. Now it wasn't anything big, but he was limited in practice all week heading into that contest. And then obviously Mark Ingram returned to the lineup. And you knew going into this season that when Mark Ingram returned, it was going to hurt Alvin Kamara. If you didn't see that one coming, then you had unreasonable expectations for Kamara. Through the first 4 weeks this season, Alvin Kamara had about a 59% rushing share and a 29% target share. Last year, those numbers were about 27% and 20%. Alvin Kamara was not going to keep up his market share numbers that he saw through the first 4 weeks of the season. And the game against Washington just got out of hand. The Saints ran away with it early, which meant there was less of a need to throw their talented, banged-up running back onto the field. Kamara only touched the ball 4 times in the second half. So like I said, Alvin Kamara wasn't going to maintain the type of market share numbers that he was seeing throughout the first 4 weeks of the season. That wasn't going to happen. But to expect this type of split moving forward would be absolutely foolish. There's no need to assume his target share numbers will drastically change from last season. And given what we saw from him on the ground from weeks 1 through 4, his rushing share should be higher than his sub 30% mark that he saw a season ago too. Now he's going to score fewer touchdowns from here on out this year compared to last year. I say this all the time, but the Saints had the same number of rushing touchdowns as they did passing touchdowns last year, and that's something that typically bounces back year over year. You typically see regression hit when that happens. But to that point, New Orleans is a more pass-friendly team in 2018 than they were in 2017. Last year, they had a pass-to-rush attempt ratio of 1.28. This season, it's 1.51. And the reason for that is that the Saints have been a lot worse defensively, so they can't just run the football whenever they want. And that's really good news for Alvin Kamara. Because if he maintains that 20% target share for the rest of the season, then he's gobbling up one-fifth of a larger pie. There are more passes in the New Orleans offense. And that can help combat any lack of touchdowns that he'll see from here on out versus how he performed last year. He's splitting work, sure, but he's splitting work in a very effective offense. And he's going to see plenty of work through the air. After one game, we should not be selling Alvin Kamara. We should be buying based on how fantasy managers seem to be viewing Mark Ingram's presence. Sell Tyler Lockett. Last week, I talked about Russell Wilson as a sell. And he went out there and he threw 3 touchdowns against Oakland in Week 6. But to be honest, that doesn't really change the crux of the argument for selling Russell Wilson. He keeps throwing touchdowns at an unsustainable rate. His 7.9% touchdown rate is over 2 percentage points higher than his career average. He's failed to hit the 200-yard mark in half of his games this year. He's only come close to 300 yards once, and that came all the way back in Week 1. So to put this another way, Seattle has been a run-heavy team who just happens to be scoring touchdowns through the air. And yes, Russell Wilson is good, but the touchdown rate that he has right now is not easy to maintain throughout the course of a season. And no player has benefited from that touchdown rate more than Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett has scored a touchdown in all but one game this year. He's finding the end zone for every 72 yards receiving. The league average at wide receiver over the last 7 years has been a touchdown scored on every 166.8 yards. So this is not sustainable for Tyler Lockett. And with Doug Baldwin looking healthy again, we shouldn't expect Lockett to keep this up. Add Deontay Foreman. Now, I'm not much of a believer in players coming off of injuries, let alone career-altering ones. And that's what we're getting with Deontay Foreman. Last season, Foreman tore his Achilles, and that's a tough injury to come back from. But it does sound like things are progressing well. He's on track to return this season, and he's eligible to come off the PUP list in Week 7. And all the while, Houston's running backs haven't been all that great this season. Offensive line issues aside, Lamar Miller has just a 36.5% success rate, and Alfred Blue's success rate is just 32.7%. Typically, the league's average success rate at running back is just south of 40%. Now, it's unlikely that we see Foreman make an immediate impact. Bill O'Brien actually doesn't sound that confident that Foreman's going to suit up this weekend. But he is a decent stash in an offense with lots and lots of potential. By Jarvis Landry. So since Baker Mayfield became starter, Jarvis Landry has actually seen his production drop. He has just 114 yards across Cleveland's last three games. During the first two games of the season, he had 175 yards. But there are lots of things going in his favor right now. He has a top 10 target share in the league, he's close to the top 10 in air yards, and as I talked about last week on this podcast, the Browns' schedule is juicy over the next month. They'll face arguably the best matchup for passing attacks this week against the Buccaneers, and then they'll see the Steelers, Chiefs, and Falcons. It is the perfect time to buy Jarvis Landry. Sell Alex Collins. So here's the good news. Alex Collins saw two goal line carries in Week 6. He's had issues holding onto the football dating back to college, and there was a fear that I've talked about many, many times on this podcast, that he'd lose all goal line duties as a result of his inability to hold onto the football. So that hasn't totally happened. That's great. But Collins has not been great. He's reached 10 receiving yards in just one game this year, and he's not having a lot of success on the ground. He hasn't hit 70 yards rushing in a single game. And a lot of that has to do with Buck Allen. Allen has more than double the number of targets as Collins, and across the season, he has just as many goal line rushes. Over the team's last three games, Buck Allen has also played 14 more snaps than Alex Collins has. Collins is coming off a game where he was able to find the end zone twice. Considering his low yardage totals and how running backs have historically scored with those totals, he should have closer to just one touchdown this season versus the four that he has. So sell Alex Collins. Add Ito Smith. Devontae Freeman has a foot injury and he didn't play in Week 6, and that allowed Ito Smith to be the team's number two back against the Bucs. And the split between Smith and teammate Tevin Coleman wasn't very significant. Ito Smith played just 7 fewer snaps than Tevin Coleman against the Bucs. And Smith has been pretty effective this year. He actually leads all Atlanta running backs in success rate. And the Falcons haven't been afraid to use him in high leverage spots. He has 2 carries within the 10-yard line versus Tevin Coleman's 1 over the last 3 weeks. Look, I'm an Ito Smith truther. I talked about Ito Smith a lot before this season started. But I think objectively, he's earned a role in that backfield. And if Freeman misses more time and his injury lingers, then Ito Smith does work as a flex play with some upside moving forward. Buy Odell Beckham. Look, I get it. It's tough to buy players right now who are associated with Eli Manning. Eli Manning has been dreadful. But with Odell Beckham, you're buying the peripherals in the upcoming schedule. Beckham still has a top target share in football, and he's got one of the best air yard target shares in the league, too. Volume has not really been the problem for OBJ. The issue has been taking that volume and then turning it into big performances. Specifically, big performances where touchdowns are being scored. But fortunately, the Giants will face the Falcons and the Buccaneers in 2 of their next 4 games. Those are 2 of the worst teams at defending wide receivers. Then they also get Washington and San Francisco in between, who don't pose as super serious threats to OBJ. So similar to Jarvis Landry, the usage and schedule should create a nice bounce back for Odell Beckham. Add Marlon Mack. Marlon Mack is owned in just 26% of Yahoo Fantasy Leagues, and he returned to action in Week 6 and got the start for the Colts. Now, the game script went south for Indianapolis, so the team utilized Nyheim Hines more than they used Marlon Mack on Sunday. But Mack was still on the field for 34.8% of the team's snaps. And with games upcoming against Buffalo and Oakland, game flow should be a lot better for Marlon Mack. So he's worth an add this week, though he shouldn't be a huge priority for most teams considering his situation. Sell James White. So if you guys remember, before Week 5, I called James White more of a higher-end RB2 in fantasy football as opposed to the RB1 that he was performing like. And then he went out and he caught 10 passes for 77 yards, he scored a touchdown through the air, and he had one on the ground too. So good job, JJ. Week 6 was more or less what we should expect moving forward, though. New England didn't face much of a negative game script, and White was on the field for about 42% of the team's snaps. That type of snap share should continue with the emergence of Sony Michel. Now, White did see 7 targets, but those 7 looks accounted for 20% of New England's targets. His target share entering that game was 24.5%. And that's what will give him a high floor each week, especially in PPR formats. He's going to still see a lot of targets in that offense. But goal line work is Sony Michel's work. And James White was overperforming in the touchdown column big time heading into week 6. Given his rushing and receiving yardage totals, White should have had 3 fewer touchdowns than he scored up until that point. Even if you account for the Patriots' offense, he was still in store for touchdown regression. If you can sell James White as an RB1, then you absolutely do it. He's a pretty strong piece in your RB2 spot, but don't expect him to score at the rate that he was to start the year. And New England performing at New England levels again only strengthens that point because they may not see as many negative game scripts. Hold Will Fuller. If you listen to last week's late round podcast mailbag episode, then you might recall me talking about Will Fuller and Kiki Cutie's effect on Will Fuller's target share. Will Fuller's target share started to shrink when Kiki Cutie became more involved in this offense. Now, Fuller missed some time in their matchup against the Colts a few weeks ago, but over his last 2 games, he has just 6 targets for an 8.7% target share in that offense. I don't think we should just brush this aside. Anytime you add a genuine piece to an offense, other non-elite players will suffer. DeAndre Hopkins is not going to suffer from Kiki Cutie because DeAndre Hopkins is a freak of nature. Will Fuller is not on DeAndre Hopkins' level. He's a really good player who can score points in bunches, but when the deep balls aren't connecting, it's a problem. And that's what we're seeing right now. But the issue is you can't exactly sell Will Fuller after these 2 down games. If you can, I'm not against it because I do think that Kiki Cutie is impacting Will Fuller's production. But for now, you probably have to hold him. Add Christian Kirk. The arrow has been pointing up for Christian Kirk for a few weeks now. It's just that the Cardinals' offense isn't very good. With Josh Rosen under center, though, Christian Kirk has seen 19 targets, which is good for a 21.1% target share. When Sam Bradford was under center, Kirk's target share was 15%. Now, after this week's game against Denver, Arizona will face 3+ matchups for Christian Kirk. They get the 49ers, the Chiefs, and then the Raiders. Rather than wait for that stretch, it's not a bad idea to just get Christian Kirk right now. Sell Trey Burton. As I tend to say each week, if your tight end is breathing, your tight end is probably usable in fantasy football. In Trey Burton's case, it's not that he won't be a start-worthy tight end for a lot of teams for the rest of the season. It's just that people rostering Burton have been pretty fortunate. He keeps finding the end zone. His actual production hasn't exactly coincided with his fantasy production. He only has 15 receptions and fewer than 200 receiving yards. He's just scored 3 times, so he's a fringe tight end 1. So if you have Trey Burton, I'm fine with selling Trey Burton. I would rather roster someone like Vance McDonald over Burton moving forward. Buy Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks still only has 1 touchdown this year, and that's really hurt his fantasy football production. But he's one of the top positive touchdown regression candidates that you'll find. Despite missing the majority of his Week 5 game against the Seahawks with a concussion, Brandon Cooks still ranks in the top 10 in receiving yards. And he has a 24.1% target share in games outside of that Seattle one where he was knocked out. And he also has 7 red zone targets, which ranks in the top 25 across the league. It's not like they're only utilizing Brandon Cooks as some deep threat. The Rams face San Francisco, Green Bay, New Orleans, Seattle, Kansas City, and Detroit over their next 6 games. Some of those games will project to be very high-scoring games, and none of them are all that scary from a matchup standpoint. I think all of this makes Brandon Cooks a really good buy right now. Add Mitchell Trubisky. Mitch Trubisky's numbers have been awesome over the last 2 games, but let's not get too excited. He has a touchdown rate of almost 16% over his last 2 games. The league's average touchdown rate usually hovers around 4.5%. But with that being said, he's in a really good spot in Week 7, and he makes for a good quarterback streamer. The Patriots are going to Chicago, where they're 3.5-point favorites with a fairly high 49.5-point over-under. On the year, New England ranks in the bottom half of the league in net yards per attempt allowed, and they've surrendered the 10th most passing yards. 3 quarterbacks have also posted high-end QB1 numbers against the Patriots in 6 games. So I think that you could do a lot worse than Trubisky off the waiver wire for your quarterback spot this week. Add the Indianapolis Colts defense. Since week 2, which is when Josh Allen took over for the Bills, defenses have averaged 3.6 sacks and 1.4 interceptions per game against Buffalo. This week, it's the Colts' turn. They're in Indianapolis, and the Bills are fairly big underdogs against the Colts. And the over-under is just 42.5 points. So in other words, Indy could be playing with a positive game script at home against a turnover-prone offense. So Indy is a top defensive streamer this week. The 16th transaction this week that you can't get in my weekly 15 transactions column on NumberFire is to buy Baker Mayfield. I mentioned this last week, but I want to reiterate it. And I guess I mentioned it with Jarvis Landry earlier on this episode as well. But I think the Browns' passing game has a really good opportunity to break out over the next month given their matchups. Mayfield hasn't been helped much by his receivers over the last couple of weeks, and admittedly, he hasn't been flawless either. He only has a 41% success rate. That's far below the league's average. But I can't help but get excited about the upcoming schedule. The Bucs, Steelers, Chiefs, and Falcons is an incredible four-game stretch. And I think Mayfield could end up being a plug-and-play option off the waiver wire starting this week. There's definitely risk involved, though. I care far more about the offense than the defense. I care more about an offense being effective than I do the matchup. That's why I talk about target share and rushing share all the time. But the pieces are definitely there for this to be a great run from a fantasy football perspective. That's going to be it for today's show. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've got to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter, at LateRoundQB. If you have a question for this week's mailbag episode, you can hit me up on there. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you later in the week.